matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen, one Jesus sighting at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
I'm Rick Ingham.
I'm Robert Black.
And I'm Dave Pallas.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, thank you for having us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it was very gravitas how you said it. Yes, no, I'm happy to be in the owl ship.
Good, good. It's getting a little crowded in here, but we'll just open up the door, get some air moving.
Better to be in here than out there any day.
Yeah.
Especially with the backdraft crossover we're dealing with for today's minute.
Baby! That's the first. If you're drinking, that's the first backdraft reference we're going to make.
Well, this is minute 121, which starts with Lori escorting people onto Archie and ends with Dan asking Lori about World War III. I guess I should say right off at the top here, welcome back, Eric.
Oh, yeah, you too, Travis.
Thanks, buddy.
It's been a long time.
It's been a while.
So you're back from a hiatus and you're like, these are the minutes we got to handle. And we got to handle them. We got to get a whole gang here for that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that we thought, okay, let's end on 120. That was nice, even round number.
Yeah, 2 hours.
then the next minutes are going to be these.
Well, you just wanted to come back with a bang.
Oh, baby. Nice.
And of course, I'm talking about the explosion in the hallway.
Explosion, baby. Yeah. Backdraft.
Obviously.
Kurt Russell. The other Baldwin. No, like, the other Baldwin.
It should have ended like 5-6 minutes ago when Dan couldn't get it up.
Yeah.
All right. So
sad, Dan.
My first actually nice note here is this is honestly probably this girl's first interaction with heroes, because she's probably young enough to not like ever see heroes do anything, like good and bad. Like, and sure. Dr. Manhattan's probably been like, she maybe saw her parents watch the news and like they show him in the background, but you know, this is her first like up close seeing them in the city with her.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Dave, because as I was sitting here watching this and the child says, is this Jesus? And I'm like, that's a dumb line. However, I feel like you can justify it because her mom was probably sitting in that burning building all like, Jesus, come save us.
Yeah.
And then someone comes to save them and the kid's like, oh, well, this must be Jesus. Hey, mom, is this Jesus? And her mom's obviously like, no. It's like, get the kid some slack.
That's a great point. Yeah, because on the surface, you just...
an owl ship.
What's that?
Jesus would have been cooler if he had an owl ship.
Yeah, man, him just like torching all the Romans, like, payback!
Cleansing the temple would have had a very different outcome instead of him just flipping tables.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite scenes in the Jesus Christ Superstar. And in the movie, like, when he flips the table, there's so much, like, modern items there on the table. And I remember one, there's an M60, and my dad's always like, Jesus should have grabbed that 60 and just took out the Romans and the Pharisees. And I'm like, I agree. I mean, if it's there, let's take it. Oh, man.
Would have saved a lot of time.
Yeah.
Let's end the story now.
I ain't going up with no cross.
This is sounding an awful lot like the SNL sketch they had with Christoph Waltz.
Which one's that?
I think it was from Quentin Tarantino comes the newest biblical drama, Jesus Uncrossed.
Oh,
and they spelt it with the D at the beginning.
It's a silent.
Oh yeah.
I gotta look that skit up. I haven't seen that one in a while. Yeah. And obviously, like, we know, man, Zack Snyder, he loves his Jesus imagery too. He's gonna. I mean, the DC guys, the Cinematic Minute, they got to handle that. You know, they got to handle that and a lot of that on their minutes. Zack Snyder's got a hard on, man. He's got a hard on for Big JC. Is the mom a known actress here? She looks like and sounds like somebody, but I couldn't place her. And the cast list is just too big to try and find, like, mom of fired out building.
I think I tried finding the mom as well and couldn't find her in the cast list. She looks to me like one of the Latino inmates in Orange is the New Black, maybe.
Maybe that's why.
But I don't think she is on that show. She just looks like one in particular.
Yeah.
the girl here is Sahara Davis, and you wouldn't see her in the credits listed as that either, because it in the credits for the in this movie and like in IMDb, she's credited as Sahara X Oasis Ashanti Davis. But the real reason her name sticks out is because that middle name X Oasis is spelled like lowercase X, capital O in Oasis, and it's like run together like X Oasis. So I have no idea what that name's all about. But
oh, she's an Oasis of the Kilkenny Oasises.
Yes,
or she used to be.
She looks like one.
Like so.
But I mean, yeah, it's like Sahara, and then they're like, well, we made a Sahara reference. We should make another desert reference. I don't want to talk bad about someone's name, but I mean, like, give me two desert names in a name. I gotta, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, she asks her mother about Jesus, and that's in the book. I don't think it's in the theatrical cut though. So I think it is added here for the director's cut.
So as we mentioned, the mother's response is no baby. And it made me wonder, in a world with Dr. Manhattan, where you've got people having interviews and they're like, you know, God exists and he's American. In that reality, does Carrie Underwood go on to write the song Jesus Take the Wheel, or does she rewrite it at like Dr. Manhattan Take the Wheel?
I don't know. He's so apathetic. He probably wouldn't even care about cars. And he would go into this big rant about like, our need for resources and burning fuel and something. You're like, all right, Dr. Man, never mind. It's just a song. It's just a song. Like,
it's just black ice. I can steer through it. You don't need to worry.
You don't need to melt down my car and turn it into snowflakes.
Yeah. The most efficient way. You're like, oh, jeez. Oh, you're ruining it. They're burning the interior.
Gosh, Carrie Underwood hits that black guy, starts crying out. All of a sudden, Dr. Manhattan's there. He reaches out his hand, and then the car just turns to dust.
Yeah, and he just teleports into a field, and he's like, I turned your car into this, like a metal flower. And you're like, I don't, what do we react to this?
I had one more payment.
How are you going to explain that to Allstate? They're going to be like, you're in good hands, but
you don't have Dr. Manhattan insurance? Well, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. It kills me. I was laughing earlier about, you know, I wonder if Silk Spectre's suit is like it's fire resistant or something like that. And then I realized it doesn't matter. She's got super long hair just flipping around in the fire.
That's fire resistant.
Yeah, she's gonna go up like Michael Jackson if she gets hit by a fireball.
I say, is the movie still set in 1985?
Yes.
Because in that case, there's probably so much product in it.
Yeah.
She's probably just using like asbestos shampoo.
I want to know this. Explain this one to me. When she asks, is that everyone? And she doesn't from anyone. Just the explosion answers with a beeping noise. Like, I wanted to know, was there a hint in this? I don't remember this. Was there a hint in this scene that there was a firebomb arson?
No.
Like Scott Glenn is hiding somewhere in the building.
Well, what even explodes? It's just a fire.
I mean, well, it's Backdraft. And they opened up the window. They let the air in. Like, that's what Robert De Niro taught us in Backdraft.
I've not watched Backdraft in quite a while.
Yeah, honestly, that's a perfect like Saturday afternoon movie, like when like cable was on, but like now we're all like just streaming stuff, so we don't have the time to just like watch a movie. We feel like it's like, oh, they just dropped 13 new episodes of like this documentary about, you know, the drug trade and this and that, and like and this true crime. I gotta watch this. I gotta get this all done before like I gotta work the next day. So
do you guys want to hear a fun fact about Backdraft?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Backdraft was the highest grossing film about firefighters until 2007 with the release of I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Whoa. You know what's funny is you would think that there was more like serious dramas about the firefighters in New York during 9/11. And I was expecting you to say like the one with Nick Cage or something. And then you go, nah, man, it's Chuck and Larry.
What about Firestorm with Howie Long?
Or Company Ladder 14 with John Travolta and Joaquin Phoenix.
We got to go fight the fire now. Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's a good question.
It's kind of surprising that Steve Buscemi didn't do something.
Mm-hmm.
Since he was a firefighter.
Yeah.
That day.
All right, so Backdraft came in. What year was that again? That was 91. So, and they didn't, so they, and really, like, Firestorm didn't beat it in 1998?
I guess not. I don't think
that movie performed very well.
They grossed $152.4 million. That's domestic and worldwide combined.
For Backdraft?
Yep.
Okay.
And Firestorm, it says it made all of 8 million.
Woof.
Yeah.
Sounds like a few more people should have bought passes to the Fireman's Ball.
Directed by Dean Semler of Mad Max 2.
Yeah, he was the cinematographer for Road Warrior.
I think it just says Mad Max 2, and I'm like, what the hell's Mad Max 2? Like, I forgot they, like, they call it that. It's like, no, we all know what it should be. Because it's not like they call it Mad Max 3 Beyond Thunderdome. It's just Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. So, ugh, man, I hate when sequels do this. Yeah, that's my bad.
What really grinds your gears, Dave?
Yeah. I think it grinds my gears is, like, maybe now because we're going over these seconds by seconds, minute by minute. But damn it, does, like, the CGI bother me then with the explosion coming at her? Because she whips her hair around in the high, and they get the high motion, high slow motion, high frame rate stuff. But, like, there's no air blast on her hair. Like, her hair then just falls right back down as there's, like, gusts of wind blasting everything else. Mm. It's like they should have had, you know, clearly she's in front of a green screen. They should have had a damn wind, you know, like a fan blowing her hair as well, because her hair just kind of, she whips her hair to, whoa, I got to run back into the ship. And her hair goes, wow, it's cool
her
spin.
Her hair is fire and wind resistant.
Yeah, like, yeah, I want a raincoat out of her hair. And I say that in the most serial killer way.
Now, what do we think caused this explosion? I have a theory, but I want to hear what everybody else has.
Well, I already threw the bomb beeping reference out, so I don't know what else I got. So I am. I'm lost.
There's a room full of propane tanks.
Yeah.
I like the propane tanks idea, but I'm willing to bet that the floor below them had a lot of rent-controlled senior citizens that are using oxygen tanks in order to breathe. And that's why the explosions progress towards the ceiling or towards Lori, because each apartment is sequentially blowing up and all of those old people are just being left behind to die in a fire.
Is that everyone? Oh, yeah, everyone's just burned.
Meanwhile, old man Johnson's like, I'm still here.
Is that everyone in the vicinity of my voice?
Raise your hand if you're not here.
Yeah, raise your hand if you can hear me over the sound of the fire. Do we know if this tower, was this like a low income like housing development project? Like, is that why the firemen are taking their, like, because I was thinking about, like, you know, it's the 80s. Firemen are like, you know, it's like, oh, it's in the, like, the low income area. It takes a while to get down. And, you know, like, you could make a class, you know, a political talk about class here. But, like, I mean, it could be that, yeah, you have old people with oxygen tanks. Or you could just have, like, you know, the floor below, which maybe caused this fire, was, you know, there was, like, a meth lab or something. You know, someone's, like, doing, like, having an illegal operation in this building. And
I have
there
a
you
theory
go.
Based on what's on go screen. Because in the book, he serves coffee to these people, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the movie, that doesn't happen, but we see him putting coffee cups away.
Yeah.
I think he was covering up for, like, a secret coffee shop. Not a meth lab.
What?
It's like a pirate Starbucks or something.
You're saying a pop-up Starbucks competitor somehow had so much high-pressure caffeine coffee?
Those espresso machines are crazy.
Jesus Christ.
That's what the beeping is. Someone's drink was ready.
So you said something about the fire, you know, fire truck response. And I'm trying to remember now how many minutes ago they got called into action, because they were just out joyriding in Archie. And then over the police scanner, they hear about this tenement fire. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that would have been maybe 2 or 3 minutes ago.
Dan got the water tower to fall over and put out some of the fire.
Right.
That took some time up there.
So probably, I mean, they showed up, you know, maybe like I said, maybe 2 or 3 minutes ago. And I think it's pretty decent response time for the for New York's finest.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, I hope they saved a decent amount of people because it's like right now it feels like whatever was on the ship is the only survivors of this building. You know, you got that bad feeling where you're like, I'm like, it's good they saved people, but it's like, you know, the guilt layer, like, you know, they'll read the newspaper layer where it's like 40 people died in the fire. Like, oh my God, like that building on the third floor
just couldn't make it.
I say we don't need to get into an Oscar Schindler situation where, you know, right. this car could have saved one more person. When the ship gets blown back from the building by the explosion, you can actually see down below in the street there's a fire truck arriving.
Mm, yep. Yeah. The book rescue is quite different. There's no like daring entrance through the roof or dramatic shots of Silk Spectre, you know, backlit by fire. They just pull up alongside like ordering drive through and they extend a ramp and then she guides people across. Now I completely get why they turn this scene into kind of a more action, you know, heavy. They need a heroic sequence with their first night out, that sort of thing. So
but how long ago was the fight in the alley?
I mean, in the movie,
that's a while ago, but in the like the timeline, isn't it very recent? Like in the movie?
It would have been like a few days ago because she,
maybe minute 67 ish.
That's a while.
I think.
Oh wow! Yeah. So almost an hour ago.
Was the alley fight around there?
A whole movie happened between now and then.
Absolutely. You know, I appreciate the change that Lori goes into the building because it gives the guy in the red and white bathrobe a chance to be the hero as he's helping people across, like. That guy just shows that not all heroes wear capes movie where all the heroes wear capes.
A bathrobe is basically a cape.
Is it, though?
Hell yeah, it is.
But then I have a problem with this guy doing that on this, because I've talked about this plank ramp thing before. It seems awfully narrow.
Yeah, he's taking a big risk. He's
standing like on the edge of it, trying to get people by on the side of him.
Yeah. Well, he only seems to help a few people because we get the overhead shot and then we get a couple of different angles and then he's just not on there anymore.
Mm-hmm. He saved the few neighbors he liked. And he's like, all right, I got my family and Gary down the hall. He's a good guy. And then there's the rest of these people. I don't give a
hoot. I think
he's the last one to get in the door, though. When they cut to the different angle, you can see his bathrobe.
And he's the one when the ship is beginning to fly away as everyone's on the ground. He's the one, I think, holding the little girl that we saw as they're both like waving, you know, bye to her. So he made it to the ground at the same time everyone else did.
Do you think that's her pop?
I guess so. So she got to see her, you know, her dad maybe helping guide all these people to safety. And then
he's a hero too.
Yeah.
I like how Dan turns around like, oh, did you make it? Oh, thank God. I closed that door without looking behind me. Glad you're here.
Oh, man. He's like, that would have drastically changed the tone of this movie if Dan turned around and Lori just wasn't there. Like, she's clinging to the outside of the ship like Garfield on a windshield.
The guy in the bathrobe just looks at him and just shakes his head no.
I'm sorry. Your girl,
she just didn't make it.
But then I'd have her climb around the ship so she's knocking on the front and be like, let me in. Thank you kindly.
Her yelling to the glass.
The next 2 minutes would not happen the same way if that was the case.
Yeah. Hold on. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. I can just see him go, oh, man. Oh, jeez. But, I know you talk about the coffee cups. I really love the coffee cup, like, detail. It doesn't, you know, it seems that, you know, he's got a coffee maker and cups, like, for stakeouts on the ship. I just, you know, that little thing I like.
When the cups are the cups are labeled, we are happy to save you.
Serve you.
He gives coffee to the people he saves.
Okay, what bothers me is Dan is out of the game. He's not actively flying around being a vigilante. So how fresh are these snacks that they're serving? Like, is this just old ass coffee that he's had sitting on a shelf for half a year? Because
he makes his own coffee down there. This is
freeze dried Folgers crystals.
Oh yeah, it's 85.
Yeah,
some Folgers crystals in there.
Oh God.
the I like seeing the "We are happy to serve you" cups. It's the because they do kind of get their own hero shot, nice and prominent as Lori tucks them away. And it's obviously it is a nod to the book where Dan calls out, you know, there's a hidden panel on the ship with a coffee maker. And these are the iconic New York coffee cups, which would have been in every deli throughout the city. In they were designed by in 1963 by Leslie Buck, who was a marketing director for the Sherry Cup Company, which later became the Solo Cup Company.
Huh.
And it's when he designed them, he just wanted it to he wanted a cup which represented Greece and appealed to all the Greek vendors that were, I guess, very prominent throughout New York City.
So we're a couple of years away from having a Toby Keith reference.
Several years. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I remember.
What that's what you got from all that.
If anything,
you said Solo cups, and I was like, oh, wait, I know that.
Yeah. No, I honestly, I remember one of my favorite diners growing up in high school. Yeah, this older Greek guy ran, and him and his family got out of the game. But yeah, I remember him like just sitting there behind the cash register, smile always, and I go, yeah, you know, like best Greek diner owner of the game. I swore by that. And then like they changed owners, and you know the owners like they slimmed down the menu and stuff. Like there wasn't any cool like you know, like the lack of specials and stuff. And you're just like, oh my god, the old guy ran this like had so well done. Like my favorite dish I ever had there, it's insane. It was a scallops on top of crab meat dish. And you're like, seafood at a diner? Are you insane? I used to think about how good that meal was. It was like a small bed of like linguine pasta. And like an oil butter sauce, and then yeah, and just like a few scallops on top of crab meat. Oh my god, I still think about how good that dish was. Man. Oh man, good time.
I don't have a favorite Greek restaurant in mind, but there is a Greek Orthodox church in one of the big cities by me, and every year they have a huge festival that just takes over that part of the city. And I've never gone because it's always mobbed, but I've heard that the food is amazing.
Oh my god! Yeah, you gotta check that out. Yeah, just for me, almost.
Yeah. That being said, there is a place in that same city that specializes in gyros, and it's called the G Spot.
Yes, baby.
You hit the G Spot, and you're gonna have a good meal.
We'll get there tomorrow, Rick. Maybe Wednesday.
Oh man, I can't find it. Where is it? I can't find the thing, Rick.
I'm pretty sure we don't find it until Wednesday.
No. I have a few more legit notes. Hold on. Yeah.
Go for it.
No. Okay. So yeah. So the actual like real dialogue here is, you know, them damning the system and the politics where it's just like, you know, we could be arrested. He's like, World War III. It's like, and it's also, it's like, what bad press are they going to spin it that we try to start this fire, you know, and save people? Like what else, you know, what's like the nightly news going to really do about, you know, about this? It's like the firefighters were there in the shot. You could see the firefighters with the people on the ground. So the firefighters, they're not like, we're not going to say anything bad about you guys. Like, you gave us a big help tonight.
And if anybody does say anything bad about them, they could just get Billy Joel to be their PR guy. Let everybody know that they didn't start the fire.
Your future. A few years early.
There's a change that they do here from the book to the screen that I'm really pleased with. There's no "You're My Thrill" by Billie Holiday playing over the like ship speakers. In the book, he puts it on as a calming effect to serve with their coffee, that kind of thing. And like, if that song were playing during my rescue from a burning building, I don't think that would help take the edge off, because that is not a soothing song. I think it'd make me extra nervous and tense. And I'm glad they don't play it here. It is in the movie. It's during the, I guess, the first sex scene with Dr. Manhattan and Lori. So,
well, you know what song was actually on the radio in 1985 that might have been playing over some sort of PA system?
Please tell me.
It's the Talking Heads and their hit "Burning Down the House."
Yeah. Hold tight. We're till the party over. Hold tight. That's my go-to karaoke song.
Nice.
What if nasty weather? you know, and actually a good soothing song that he should have played, you know, was some 1983 hit National Lampoon's Vacation, just by Holiday Road. Like, how can you not put a smile on your face hearing that song?
They'll all start singing along, forget yeah. they're even in a fire.
Yeah, it's really easy to sing along to that song because Lindsey Buckingham only wrote two verses and he repeated one of them twice. And then the rest of the words are just Holiday Road.
Yeah, it's all you want. Yeah. You're like,
Well, someone in a coma could sing along to that song.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you just kind of like hum. You're gonna hum the verse. Like, wait,
there are words other than Holiday Road.
Yep, it's I found out long ago. It's a long way down to the Holiday Road, and then Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, take a ride on the West Coast Kick. Those are the other lyrics besides Holiday Road. I looked it up.
It's just like, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's just that. That is a hook, man. You just get that in your head. He's like, yeah. And so you're saving people and everything. Like, oh my God. Oh, I almost burned alive. This and that. Holiday Road.
Like, yeah, I'm trying to find someone who can re-record that song for me and change up the lyrics. So instead of it saying Holiday Road, it says Fury Road.
Oh, bro! Oh my God, yes.
They will do it.
You can thank Thomas Howarth for that idea. I'm just trying to make it a reality.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So
once they get everybody, you know, safe on the ground, the ship takes off, and then we cut, you know, inside, and we've already talked about the coffee cups and everything. There's a really, for me, there's a really satisfying bit of Foley right here with the noise the coffee cups make as she puts them away. And then meanwhile, like, Dan is flipping all these switches on the control panel, and it just, it's really, I don't know, sonically pleasing to me.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it's very satisfying to see someone who is the master of their domain. Like, Dan knows Archie inside and out, and he knows exactly what buttons to press and what switches to flip.
Oh, and yeah, he knows what buttons to press.
I'm sure Lori's looking at him, like, thinking about how he flew and how that rescue went. Yeah. And she's completely willing to ignore the fact that he's like, yeah, world could blow up. Hooray. That's not exactly what he said, but you get the idea.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's him. Yeah, it's him and her both like on that adrenaline because they haven't done that. You know, I mean, they did the fight thing, but now it's like we're in suits and there's a fire. Yep. Was a couple of thugs. We rescued people. We did like a honest to God good thing. And him being like, don't worry about the details of the small stuff of like what the politicians are going to say and stuff. It's like we did a good thing and it's all we can do with like the world looming down on us on this, you know, the doomsday. A doomsday clock.
Wait, he says that.
Yeah.
I just realized I have the book next to me. She's the one in the book who says, who cares, World War III could start tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah, they flip the dialogue, yeah.
I mean, I guess it's for a little bit of a character arc of him being from, like, too worrisome to being, like, F it all, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they probably felt it was important to for him to show off his confident side since we just saw her being a badass and, you know, I think like Rick said, during this rescue, he's in the cockpit the whole time. He's not the one out there, you know, risking his skin. So they need a moment for him to just for that confidence that he was missing until now. You know, we need to see him full of bravado before, I guess, for us to believe what's going to happen next.
And like, this must have been him. Like, he must be acting in this moment, this confidence, he must have had this when he was in his prime, like with him and Rorschach doing stuff in the old days. Like, you know, like he wouldn't go up to a thug and be like, oh, John, geez, I really think you should tell us the information. Like, him and Rorschach were like, we're going to beat the Pope out of you if you don't tell us about, you know, the gang or something. You know, like.
And we saw him losing that confidence, I think, with when he's out with the comedian.
Yeah. Yeah. Comedian definitely killed any mojo of like, are we the good guys here, dude?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And then you've already said it once, but the lock us up with Rorschach line that she says, I like that she's saying that. So I think that could be a part of that flip maybe or whatever, you know, that she says that and he comes back with the World War III response. But it's also, you know, I like it because it's a bit of foreshadowing here, you know. It's from his point of view, though, that he brings up.
I think the reason is because she doesn't hide behind a mask. Cause so she's out in public. She's obviously been in a relationship with John, Dr. Manhattan. So it's just like anyone could easily see she, the Silk Spectre, is out. Where it's like Dan can still hide behind the mask of the owl, but she can't. So she's like, yeah, for all I know, like they're going to be knocking on my door in the morning, taking me away. Like, you know, she has a right to be a little worried. Like, yep, yeah. I just put my face out there. Like, everyone knows the Silk Spectre, Dr. Manhattan's old girlfriend, is like, was out saving people last night. And that I know who you are, so they would grill me about who you are.
So I pulled out my copy of Watchmen just because of the talk of the book, and I noticed another big difference between what they did here in the movie and what they did in the book. In the book, it's very much Laurie alone who initiates. She walks up to Night Owl, she takes off his goggles, and then there are 12 frames, 13 if you include the splash at the bottom, that incorporate the next couple of minutes. But in this movie, they seem to be a lot more mutually attracted. Like, they're both making their own moves simultaneously.
Yeah.
Yeah, it that could be because their previous attempt at hooking up at his place, you know, she was the initiator.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out for them, obviously. And then now they may want to, I think they want to show that he's the one that sort of initiates it because he's found his mojo. So
yeah, he might as well have been Matthew McConaughey because he had a failure to launch.
Yeah, I mean it's them. I think shrugging off like any of their social worries and norms and stuff. It's them going like, we're now throwing all of our like hesitation to the wind. That's why they name drop World War III. It's like, yeah, you know, him worrying about like, oh my God, that we go blow up. It's him going like, yeah, we go blow up, but we did one good thing tonight. And you know what? Let's make the most of this night. And they do. And we're going to see it. Stay with us this week. It's going to be a wild ride.
Oh yeah. Before we get that, I want to hit my last note, and it's, he pulls off his goggles and there's no eye black, and I'm okay with this. I've talked about this before. It's one of my biggest pet peeves with comic book movies, Batman in particular. It makes sense because his goggles are part of the costume. So he wouldn't, you know, typically there wouldn't be a situation where he was, you know, around civilians without the goggles on. So he wouldn't need to put on eye black.
And he never gets out of the ship, apparently.
But yeah, basically. So I like that it's a detail here that it's not a part of his costume. So
I wanted to ask you, do you believe these goggles have like a night vision tint on it? Because you can't walk around with goggles at night, you know. You'd be blind.
There was a scene with Dan and Lori earlier where she got to try on the goggles and she got to see him in that dark kind of layer basement, low light. And it does have a night vision quality.
Okay. Yeah. He's got some predator visions on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was night vision, heat vision.
Yeah.
I don't think they got to the setting where it's like back of the magazine X-ray vision where you can just see through everybody's clothing.
That was implied.
Dan, you had this the whole time. Yeah.
And he invented them too. So there's a lot more going on with Dan that
I have a good question, but maybe we can put that to later this week. Cause I wanted to kind of fresher about Dan, but yeah, let's later this week.
Okay. Does anyone have anything else? I'm going to save any discussion about the song that starts to play. Yeah. I mean, we can mention that it starts to play, but I want to say
there'll be plenty of time for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like that. You know, as he says, right, she says, right. And then just that bit of the song starts to play. So I do like the little tease of the song.
Mm-hmm. Biggest thing I'd want to just hit real quick and just say that, you know, this is, it's synth heavy here, that I'm not that well versed in Leonard Cohen, but I think of him more as folky and piano and like guitar strumming and so forth. But we can talk more about that. Tomorrow's certainly fine.
Let's go around the table and want everyone to, you know, plug all your shows, starting with Robert, since it's his first time on the show. Tell us all about your projects.
Currently, I have Michael Myers Minute, looking at the original Halloween, minute by minute. Dave Made a Minute, which involves a lot of other people, including Eric, Rick, Dave, who else is in here?
I'm in there too.
Yeah.
Are you in there too? Yeah. Okay. And Travis. Where we're looking at the movie Dave Made a Maze, and people weren't told what movie it was ahead of time. They just got random minutes. And then coming up when both of those are done in January, February, The Room Minute is next.
God. God bless, man. God freaking bless.
That's a tough one.
Dave, where can people find you?
Yeah, hey. Yeah, they can find me over at 5minutesofmystery.com. I talk about the 1999 superhero comedy ensemble Mystery Men. And I do about but once a month, and trying to get some other episodes talking about other comic book movies, like Watchmen, you know, kind of get the vibe of outside of just the Marvel stuff. So yeah, come on, if you want to hear more about that, come on over.
Rick, hit it.
And of course, you've all heard my stuff before, back when we were handcuffing people to radiators. I am from the Mad Max Minute, covering the Mad Max series of movies 1 minute at a time. As it currently stands, we have completed the original trilogy, Mad Max through Thunderdome, but coming in March 2019, we will be launching into Fury Road, so be sure to join us for that.
All right, gentlemen. I think this was a nice nice build-up for
foreplay.
It's the only foreplay we're going to get.
All right. Well, then why don't we all return tomorrow and just try to behave?
Fingers crossed.
But until then, who watches The Watchmen?
We do.
We do.
Watchmen are over.